Hello and welcome to Eggpod Express with me, Chris Shaw. Eggpod Express takes a jaunty stroll through 1960s music magazines with a potpourri of delicious guests. To read along with us, the magazine's online at iamtheeggpod.com, where you'll also find an exclusive playlist related to this particular issue. To support this podcast and to access bonus content, please subscribe to patreon.com/eggpod. And this is part two of my interview with Gail Reynard. Enjoy. Huge Spain Fest. We turn to page 38 and it's Sixth Sense and the Procol Harum.
Procol Harum, again, one of the definitive songs of the 60s, White as Shade of Pale. Incredible song. It's only now, because again, then I was going, this is heavy, this is artistry at its best. And now I realized it was a stoner dream, a lot of it, because with my intellectual hat on, I was going, he's quoting from Chaucer's Canterbury Tales about the miller and his wife and all the rest. And this is, look, mother, it's educational. And now, when I knew it had a dreamlike quality, but it was more an opium dream or whatever. But majestic song. But you know, it was one of the biggest court cases that came from the song in 2009, because it was Matthew Fisher, who was the organist, took this to court. Because it's true, if you think of White as Shade of Pale, you think of that magnificent organ opening and the organ work. And he argued in court, because he didn't get any composer's money from it, and he argued successfully in court that he made the song, that organ music, totally transformed.
Well, it's the whole, the melody, isn't it, more or less?
Yes.
Isn't it? It's beautiful.
And the haunting, I mean, the haunting work and everything else, that's what you think. And he got 40%, deservedly, but
certainly,
I don't know what the other 60% of the band thought.
But Keith Reid's, I mean, there's an interview here with Keith Reid. He's sort of the lyricist. He couldn't actually play any instruments, but his lyrics, he describes them not as poetry, but as music. And when you think of it, you can skip the light fandango, and then it scans differently. So it's definitely a verse and a chorus. So it's not really poetry as such, but it's very flowery. But the phrasing of the words, because obviously Gary Brooker would then get these words and put a tune and melody to it. But a lot of Procol Harum tend to have that da 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 da. And you can hear Gary Brooker trying to put the words into some sort of melody. But with this one of the favourite things I love, it's so structured, the phrasing, is that, have you heard David Mitchell, because he managed to successfully sing the lyrics of White as Shade of Pale to the theme from The Muppet Show.
Oh, how glorious. That is fabulous.
Let me play you a bit.
Yes, please.
Cross the floor, was feeling kinda seasick, but the crowd called out for more. The room was humming harder as the ceiling flew away. When we called out for another drink, the waiter brought a tray. So it was that later, as the miller told his tale, that her face at first just ghostly turned a white shade of pale.
That is the most incredible thing I have ever heard. I mean, well done to David Mitchell, and also to take one of the most beautiful poetic pieces of music from the 60s and reduce it totally. It's incredible. Same words.
Yes.
And yet.
That's what I mean. I mean, his lyrics are they all seem to be written in that way. I think another big thing at the time, obviously Bach's Air on a G String, so popular at the time. So obviously you had the Hamlet advert at this time.
Yes.
And obviously this was very much based on it. But also there's a song by The Herd called Sad.
Sad, everything has turned to grey. Seems so little left to say. Let me be in my sadness. Even tears won't help the pain that I feel.
Which leans even more into the Bach version. And there's a scene in the Beatles' Yellow Submarine with a Hamlet ad. And also George Martin on his British Made album from 1968. He does the version of White a Shade of Pale, but starts it off with the Bach. Boom, boom, boom. So it was everywhere at this time.
Well, it was wonderful, and also it was out of copyright.
Oh, of course, yes.
Sorry, as we've said, I used to be chair of the Writers Guild of Great Britain.
There's an old vacant apartment above the shop on the square. Something keeps bringing me back to those final moments we shared. To that glass, the reflections cast their glow on the door. Empty shadows of night on the floor.
So page 51, we have Rave's weather chart, W-H-E-T-H-E-R. Your favourite stars review their own new discs and tell you whether or not they think they'll make the charts. And one that does jump out is The Action, Shadows and Reflections, which was produced by George Martin. And they're one of those really frustratingly great bands that never quite made it, and they had everything going for them. They started off as a mod band supporting The Who at the Marquee, had a great singer in Reg King. They were signed to Parlophone and had the best possible producer in George Martin, but they just never seemed to have any hits. And this is an absolute banger. It's, again, obviously very psychedelic. But I think, I wonder if it's just a reflection of just the sheer amount of great music coming out at that time, why stuff like this just got hidden away.
Yeah, every so often you do come across these great songs and think, how was this not a huge hit?
Yeah. Well, it's written by Tandin Alma, who'd previously written Along Comes Mary for the Association.
Oh, again, I could sing it for you now, but lucky you, I won't. The one point I wanted to make about 60s music as well are the harmonies.
Yes.
Because we don't get that now, because mainly because it's one person and double tracking or whatever isn't the same, or doing studio harmonies. But they all, because lots of them started together as kids and played together for years before they made it, their harmonies could be exquisite. That's how I learned to do harmony.
Yes.
Singing along to various records.
Yeah, yeah. But this one's very Beach Boy, and you can definitely hear Beach Boys in the chorus. Very good vibrations. But yeah, just wasn't a hit. And adding to that, they only recorded one album, which was Brain and Rolled Gold, and it wasn't released.
Oh, why not?
I think it ran out of steam. Eventually it did come out in about 95, but at the time it just didn't come. They've obviously got a big cult following now, but it's...
Oh, that's good, but
yeah,
sort of in 95 is a little bit after the swinging 60s.
Well, it would have been Britpop, wouldn't it? So people were rediscovering
that's true.
60s stuff, I guess.
Well, actually, I'm going to throw in a quote from Pete Townsend that it might help and might not help, because we were saying about how the different band members went on to do different bands and form new ones and all the rest. And Pete Townsend believes that a number of major pop groups are in danger from themselves. Quote, progression in pop music is just great if you can take your public with you, says Pete. But the way some groups are going at present, they just go completely over the heads of the public. It's not much use being advanced if no one is going to listen to you. Now, that's quite a wise statement from Pete. I was going to say, what about Tommy, Pete? but he took the people with him, is the answer. And that's the other thing. Unless people follow you, you can't lead. So Lord knows what happened to the action. But I'm sorry about it, because I don't even know them, and I feel sorry for them, and they sound lovely, and I want to have them over to tea.
Strobe lights beam, creates dreams. Walls move, minds do too. On a warm San Franciscan night, old child, young child, feel all right. On a warm San Franciscan night.
But we've also got Eric Burdon talking about the Changes LP, but this is actually what would be Winds of Change by Eric Burdon and the Animals. And the previous year, it's the same old story. After poor management, the business affairs are in total shambles. The Animals actually split. So, like a phoenix from the flames, a couple of months later, they were reborn with a new lineup and renamed Eric Burdon and the Animals. And it barely resembled the previous lineup. I think Eric Burdon had a road to, well, Domestos moment and had transformed from a grubby blues singer into a grubby psychedelic flower child. And he was really embracing West Coast psychedelia. And on the sleeve notes of his album, among others, he dedicates it to George Harrison, from whom I learn from being in the same room. And the Winds of Change was a real celebration of flower power, especially San Francisco Nights is on it. Oh. Yeah. They obviously played Monterey in June when he did a single of that. But this is of its time. It's weird his change from Hard Man in the Animals and then Flower Child in such a short space of time.
Yes, it was. I still like the quote of the month, which came from John Walker. Quotes, Scott wrote somewhere that money offends him. Personally, I only like it so I can spend it. The man is a philosopher.
Absolutely.
I mean, how did we never know?
Here at Contien, near the Demilitarized Zone, this is Lance Corporal Buddy Mann from Duval's Bluff. Buddy, how long have you been here?
About 36 days.
Have you seen a lot of action during those 36 days?
Just a little bit, not too awful much. A little income in here and there.
How does it feel to be down in your bunker with all of that artillery coming in?
A little bit shaky. I'm a natural-born chicken.
We understand back home that this was one of the roughest places in the war. Would you agree with that?
I certainly would. It is. It's pretty bad up here.
Could you tell us about some of your experiences since you've been here?
A lot of artillery incoming rounds and mortars. There's not much you can say about it.
Have you had some pretty close calls?
Not too close, but pretty close. I'm still here.
What do you do when you hear those rounds coming in?
You get out just about as fast as you can. Then after they slack up a little bit, you find your hole and keep your head down.
How long have you been here?
36 days.
In Vietnam?
4 months. 4 months and 2 days.
How much longer you got?
Well, I hope just 8 more months, but maybe 9 to do in Vietnam.
I think the war made people change as well, because you questioned, well, it was the whole Vietnam thing about going to kill people that you had no grudge against and you didn't know existed till the moment you were sent there. And the fact that it was, as ever, youth fighting the war. And maybe it's the first time youth questioned fighting a war because it wasn't to defend their own country.
It's weird, you think, the difference between what was going on. So obviously in America you got the civil rights as well.
Oh, yeah.
And Vietnam. All these things that were directly affecting young people. And in the UK, it wasn't quite the same. I mean, let's say BBC Two went in colour or stuff like, you know, that was kind of the big news at the time. And I wonder if that's why psychedelia is so different in the UK and America, because American psychedelia is a lot darker, Grateful Dead and things like that, and compared to the flat, you know, Pink Floyd doing The Gnome or something, you know, it's more childlike. British one tend to be more Victoriana.
Yes. I suppose in America, literally, their lives were at stake. because you could be drafted from the age of 18 for a boy, unless, of course, you had bone spurs or some good medical reason. But it really did make people examine everything. I grew up with protests, with Vietnam, bed-in, and all that, probably because of Vietnam and that. Did you have the same here?
I don't know at the time. I mean, when I was a kid, it was the miners' riots.
Of course.
Which I don't really... Well, I wasn't old enough to get involved in, but we all supported the miners. But it's not Vietnam level.
It's not rock and roll. Neither was Vietnam.
Just one more on this page. We've got Pinkerton's Colours. There's a song called Mum and Dad. And they were originally called Pinkerton's Assorted Colours. And they were a rugby-based band. And their biggest hit was Mirror Mirror from the previous year, which reached number 9 in the singles charts. Sadly, Mum and Dad didn't chart. And a couple of years later, it was all over. However, all was not lost. Their drummer, David Holland, later enjoyed more success with drumming for Judas Priest.
Oh!
While bass player Stuart Coleman went on to become a DJ on Radio 1 and later a producer for Shakin' Stevens.
Oh.
There's a crossover for you.
Well, it is. It's the seeds of rock and roll where things came from.
If there's any more living to live, the life that's left in me, I'm ready to give. There's anything more I can do, then tell me now, my love, I'll do it for you, 'cause you're my everything, everything under the sun.
Page 52 to 53, this is where it's at. Brave man Mike Grant's news and gossip from around the pop scene. And we've got the Walker Brothers. 4 months earlier, they released their final album, The 60s, Images, which hit number 6. After which they went on a package tour with Jimi Hendrix, Cat Stevens and Engelbert Humperdinck. His dinkle is always being humpled. Throughout 1967, and Scott had been upping his role as a songwriter with diminishing returns. So as well as the old artistic differences, another key issue was work permits, that they had to leave the UK for 6 months. So sadly, they split up.
Oh, well, a lot of bands just weren't destined to be. But the ones who stayed together, I mean, we still have the Stones playing. We still have half of the Who playing on a good day.
Yeah, Scott, I mean, this is the best thing really to happen for Scott, wasn't it? I think he released some of the best albums of all time.
But looking at all these boyish faces and all the rest, did we ever think some of them would still be touring in their 80s?
Yeah.
Not the 80s, but their 80s.
Yeah. Thing about Jimi Hendrix in here, I think, that's quite interesting. He says, and if you think that Jimmy's own listening might help you understand his influences, he lists the Beach Boys, Roland Kirk, Georgie Fame, Charlie Mingus and The Move as their influences. This is particularly interesting because for years they've been talking about Jimmy's quotes describing the Beach Boys as psychedelic barbershop quartet, which has been taken as an insult. But the fact he's citing them here as influences, I think it might be not a compliment, just a kind of observation, but it's always been portrayed as being a very negative thing.
No,
but
I think
maybe not.
No, I don't think it is now. Because it was because my brother was into the Beach Boys, I wasn't. Because he was listening to surfing music while I was listening to She Loves You. And I couldn't see the Beach Boys. But now we know Brian Wilson was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we knew it with Pet Sounds. We knew it. I mean, God Only Knows is one of the all-time love songs.
Mm.
So
did you buy Pet Sounds when it came out? Can you remember?
No, it would have been after.
Mm.
It didn't come from Merseyside. Why would I buy it? But no, I think Hendrix is right. And the barbershop quartet thing refers to their harmonies because, again, the Beach Boys was one of the great harmony groups.
Mm.
And it's the basic rule of harmony that it's at its best if it's siblings or people are related because you have similar voices. I mean, the Beatles were the odd ones out because they had sibling harmonies without actually being related.
Mm.
Though in Liverpool, you never know.
You heard it here first. There's one here talking about going back to what you were saying earlier. Bit of gossip. Did you ever wonder how Samantha Just came to be sitting up in that enviable high seat on Top of the Pops each week? She says, I owe the chance to Pete Murray. I did a modelling advert for a tape recorder with him once. And when Top of the Pops came to Manchester, Pete remembered me and told Johnny Stewart I might be able to go help him get dancers for the show. I brought a whole gang of kids along for the show and was invited to sit in as an assistant DJ. I've been sitting in ever since. When Sammy is not employed by the BBC, her time is fully occupied modelling.
But isn't that great? Because you could get jobs. You could work your way in, as I well know. If you were young, if you were eager, if you had some talent, and you were willing to do the work, if you were lucky, right time, right place, right, in her case, right monkey.
That's a song title, isn't it? Wrong place, right monkey. More gossip. Page 53, Denny Lane and Keith Ralph from the Yardbirds are raving about the San Francisco group Love, and particularly their debut album De Capo, available on the Elektra label. And Keith and the Yardbirds have been playing unrifled played gigs at Stratford East, where weekly happenings happen. I've never been so free as I did playing there, Keith said. The audiences were really switched on to what we were doing. We played a lot of weird taped sounds, and the audience wandered around just as they liked. They had bubble pipes and could blow bubbles around, sit on the stage, do anything they wanted. It was great for us to feel appreciated and to do what we wanted. And this is the era that, obviously, the Yardbirds, that Jimmy Page was taking over. So these long extended freakouts were obviously his inspiration.
I don't think there were bubbles in those pipes. Just, that's my observation.
No, but yeah, they were about to, a year later, the new Yardbirds would become Led Zeppelin.
Of course. I love that they have rumours here. Rumours spreading that Manfred Tom McGuinness is getting fatter. That wouldn't be a rumour. Just look at the man. Also, which is nice, Carl Wilson is a very genuine, conscientious objector.
Yeah.
But my favourite has to be Mike Nesmith's wife Phyllis, bewildered by Beatles recording session. Did Brian Epstein not pay you this month? What is this? Who does a negative Beatles thing?
I love that, because that was the A Day in the Life session, because you can see there's a footage of it and you can see Mike Nesmith there, so his wife would have been there. And she obviously wasn't, because they got the orchestra to dress up in false noses and all those sort of things. So it's obviously a bit too much for her at the time.
Well, that's why she married a monkey.
Well, yeah, you would expect, you know. But yeah, there's loads of it, all these little one-line snippets. Got Beach Boy Bruce Johnson visited Dolly's Club in London with Mr. and Mrs. Ringo Starr while on a recent visit here. And reports he found them both charming. And this is when he came over and he was spent most of the time with Keith Moon, because Keith Moon was a massive Beach Boys fan.
I never knew that.
Oh, big time. But he was into the early surf stuff. Have you heard the Ready, Steady, Go EP by The Who?
Oh.
Keith Moon, at one point in The Who's development, tried to encourage them to get into surf. So he did a, and it's brilliant. I love it so much. He got them to do a cover version of Bucket Tea. Bucket Tea, Bucket Tea, Bucket Tea. And they do it, and it's just so badly. It's a really bad horn solo by John Entwistle, and these really bad falsetto focus, but it's so good. It's really uplifting. And Keith, there's footage of Keith recording it as well, and he looks so happy. But obviously, let's do Tommy instead. You know, it's really up. But yeah, I love that.
Cruise down the street in front of school. I wanna rev it up, but I gotta be cool. Driving down the road, I'll get my hit. I'm popping the clutch and slipping the sticks. My bucket tea,
bucket tea,
bucket tea,
bucket tea,
my bucket tea,
bucket tea,
bucket tea,
bucket tea.
It was a time of the greatest innovation and experiment with music and experiment with everything. And sometimes it worked, and more than worked.
Yeah. Bruce Johnson also said when he saw Ringo, I was a little bit embarrassed about the fact that we were getting an award as the world's number one group, said Bruce, or boasted Bruce. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Beatles are first and last, but Ringo was great. He just wished us luck again next year. And this was the New Musical Express Award. Mm-hmm. For Best World Vocal Group, which the Beach Boys did win in 66, but obviously Good Vibrations and Pet Sounds. But the Beach Boys tip for the same time next year, he said, it's probably the Monkees. Well, can you guess who won the next year's?
No.
The Beatles.
I mean, the nice thing to remember is all the different groups were friends, or a lot of the groups were friends. So close they shared wives. But I also love this bit from the gossip and rumours. Alan Price found Gladys the Mog and lost her again. To lose a cat once is unfortunate.
It's full of them, yeah. And some artistic differences. Whistling Jack Smith is not pleased at the whistling on the new vaudeville band's Finchley Central, and he would know.
Having listened to Finchley Central, and I love the new vaudeville band, I think Winchester Cathedral is classic, but Finchley Central was about as exciting as Finchley Central.
I think there was a bit of a Bonzo resentment, wasn't there? Because they kind of were doing the same thing and got a bit more. Don't know how long that lasted.
Who came first? Was it New Vaudeville?
I think they came about the same time, but New Vaudeville, they had the hit first, which is a shame. But then who do we listen to more now?
There is room for all the vaudeville acts.
Get you all twisted and tangled, it's a twister. Spin the spinner and call the chop. Twister ties you up in a knot. That's twister. Yeah, twister.
Right foot blue.
Right foot blue.
Left hand red.
Left hand red.
Left.
Right.
Yellow.
Blue.
Green.
Yeah, twister. You gotta play twister in your stocking feet.
Twister, I'm Twister
Bryant.
Oh,
you gotta get it. Get Twister
from MB.
Page 54, we have a huge full page advert for Twister. It's new, it's crazy, it's Twister, it's the twistiest game yet.
It totally sums up the 60s. It is psychedelic, it is men and women getting in different positions in every way they can together and calling it a game. But it was great fun for the family, and people still play it today.
Yeah.
It comes out every Christmas. But it shows you the 60s liberation, the freedom of spirit, and the pure fun. And I think we can all use a lot more Twister today.
It was controversial at the time because competitors accused Milton Bradley, who owned it, of selling sex in a box. Depends how you play it, though, surely, isn't it?
Well, I think you just accounted for why it was such a big seller. bodies mingling isn't a way to sell things. It's in certain areas.
Some girls love to run around, love to handle everything they see. But my girl has more fun around, and you know she'd rather be with me. Me, oh my, lucky guy is what I am. Tell you why, you'll understand. She don't lie, although she can.
On page 55, we have Ravers US Cable. New happenings on the stateside scene. Rave's Jackie Harlow brings you the latest news and gossip from the States. And she says, the Turtles are just marvellous. It's a long time since I've come across a group who are so refreshing and open about things. They're nice guys who travel around on their own private plane, were in love with England even before they got here in June, and ask no more than to be enjoyed without complication. That's probably why they're one of the most televised groups in America today. And they were obviously in the charts at the time.
Oh, yeah.
She'd Rather Be With Me.
They were brilliant. I like how they're just ordinary nice guys who travel around in their own private plane.
Yeah.
But I actually came across, I was in Chicago when I was a child visiting relatives, and I saw the Turtles band coming out with their instruments. They were doing a de-rig or whatever, and I remember running over and getting autographs. And I realise now I probably got the autographs of the roadies.
Oh,
because then I thought it must be the Turtles taking their instruments out, and there would be no way. But it made me happy.
Yeah, and Happy Together album.
Oh yes,
would come out soon, which is superb. There's one tiny little bit, and it's always the tiny little bits that always jump out at me. A surprisingly small section talking about the Monterey Pop Festival, which took place last month. So it's hidden away in the middle of this gossip column in page 55. So it's interesting to consider the difference, maybe the difference of impact between the UK at that time and the US for this incredible concert. And maybe it also demonstrates a retelling of history from the US perspective, because everybody knew about it at the time. Or maybe it's just Davy Jones fans wouldn't have been interested.
Well, I mean, look at the groups that played. We're talking the Mamas and the Papas, Eric Burdon and the Animals, the Jefferson Airplane, The Who, Simon and Garfunkel, with an appearance by Ravi Shankar thrown in for good measure. For 3 months before, the organisation committee was headed by Brian Wilson, Smokey Robinson of the Miracles, and Lou Adler. I mean, again, maybe that wasn't the audience for the rave magazines, but when you have three or four pages of basically an ad for Spain, which was fabulous and obviously sponsored, I just feel that Monterey Pop Festival didn't pony up.
No.
I know I'm being harsh. I
no,
wouldn't have,
not at all.
In the 60s, honestly, I used to be innocent, and then... And then
you read Rave.
Yes.
One for you, Gail. Everyone is now looking to Canada for the next In Cult, and it could well happen. This is year anyway for all attention to be focused north of the border, since Montreal's Expo 67 is doing so well. First of the Canadian groups to kick up a storm here is called The Mandala, who are absolutely fantastically unbelievable. The whole scene is called Join the Soul Crusade. So Canada getting more than Monterey here.
Yeah, that's incredible, but sadly the Mandala passed me by. I never heard of that band, but it might be me as opposed to the fact that they weren't great. but they were singing their own kind of gospel soul. They don't want to be paid. Instead, they'll pass the hat round and collect contributions. Sounds good to me. I wonder if they got the hat back. But it was, again, well, in the same, I believe, during Expo 67, the most exciting thing that happened was Liz Taylor and Richard Burton spent their honeymoon at the Ritz Hotel in Montreal.
Which one? Which honeymoon?
Probably all of them.
Yeah, Expo 67, it was huge, hugely successful World's Fair held in Montreal. And it went from April to October 67 as part of Canada's centennial celebrations. Apparently it attracted nearly 55 million visitors, participants from 62 nations. And originally planned for Moscow, the event was awarded to Canada after the Soviet Union withdrew and was realised through the determination of Montreal's mayor.
Mayor Drapeau?
Yeah.
And I have a photo with Mayor Drapeau.
Do you?
Yes. Wow. I interviewed him for my school newspaper. I was very
good.
You've
got a habit of doing things
yes,
like that.
Yes, I do. Got me some great photos. I found one of me with Glen Campbell as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but what I remember most about Expo 67 was, again, it was freedom, it was sunshine, because in 1967 the sun always shone, it never rained, people were happy. And I remember seeing Otto Preminger, the producer-director at Expo 67, and thought that might have been the first famous person I'd seen, if you don't count Magic Tom from the local children's series.
I don't.
No one really knows what's happening in San Francisco, but this is where it's at. Traditional home of the Way Out, today mecca of happy hippies who are cracking the smooth silhouette of America's materialism with that ultimate weapon, with love.
The main problem in life is the problem of communication between you and I, and the love that potentially we have for each other. The beatnik thing was against something. It was against the establishment. It was against the way of life, you know. The hippie thing is for something. We're not against anything. We just want the freedom to be ourselves. And that's for love, for experience, positive way of life. We don't say that you're wrong. We just want to be free to be what we want to be, or what we find ourselves to be as we continue to search ourselves.
Page 57, yeah. O'Grady says, .. it with flowers. Flower power is the latest craze to hit the mad west coast of America. Here's Maureen O'Grady's personal opinion on flower power and other pop happenings. Maureen O'Grady, she got into publishing by chance. She basically visited Alfred Marx and was offered a role as a secretary to the editor of Boyfriend magazine, which is, like you were saying earlier, it's like you suddenly just got a job. But she quotes... In the beginning, I was just sitting in Les Enfants' terrible coffee bar in Dean Street, feeling guilty. But after a quick visit to Alfred Marx in Soho Square, I was shocked to find myself working next day as the editor's secretary for Boyfriend in Regent Street. Penny Valentine was there, and she told me that it was next one through the door gets the job. So, and she says, apparently after some scary months at Boyfriend, filling in as the writer after Penny suddenly left, they never bothered with replacement, but just dropped me in at the deep end. Luckily, Penny came back and we quickly became a very busy team and great friends, eventual flatmates. Again, what you were saying, you know, having flatmates. And we were churning out copy with incredible deadlines for the insatiable appetite of the publisher who took advantage of this pop music boom and the fans and us. And yeah, by 63, everything seemed to revolve around the Beatles, seeing them virtually every week. While their publicist, Tony Barrow, had a field day, bartering one Beatles session in return for two or three other Epstein turns, as he called them. And if that wasn't enough, most nights were spent at the Scotch of St. Jones, socialising with pop stars and fellow journos. A hard day's night, as they say. But Maureen, yeah, she was at the photo session with the Twist and Shout cover in Euston Road for Boyfriend magazine. And apparently she once outraged Brian Epstein for running a winner date with the Beatles without asking his permission.
I yeah. once did something similar on an old Sirius ad that I promised a magazine win a night with the actress, and I meant an evening date. Oh, no. Fortunately, we changed it before. But Isn't that wonderful how she just walked into the job?
Yeah.
But the thing was, they could walk the walk. They did the work.
She's a really good writer.
Yeah. Well, look at the writers that came out of the NME.
Who
are still brilliant today. Ian Martin, who did Thick of It and writes his books and was with Death of Stalin and all these things. David Quantick, who's still doing great comedy. Well, Pete Pifridis was...
Yeah.
Pete was all that. I mean, if you think... I mean, Danny Baker.
Yeah.
These were kids. But all you asked for was the chance. And if someone gave you the chance, you grabbed it and you ran with it. And had a lot of fun along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there's all sorts of snippets of different articles. You've got a picture of two mods wearing miniskirts for men. And I like Maureen's writing. She says, the thought of boys in miniskirts, just think of it. Boys will have to worry about who's behind them when they walk upstairs and put up with being stared at if they wear the skirts too many inches above the knee. And you can imagine the poor old drummer in a group trying to remain decent as he goes in for a frantic drum solo. But it's not a great look.
No, it didn't catch on. I remember John Lennon having a great quote about miniskirts with Cilla. And Cilla and the Beatles were friends. They'd known each other and grew up and all the rest. But they were doing some pop show together and Cilla was up a ladder and they put the Beatles below. And John just said, I can see next Wednesday's washing from here. Bless him, he was one of the best.
What an image.
You had to learn how to get in and out of cars when you wore a miniskirt.
Of course, yeah.
Yes. We were ladies.
Andy Pandy's coming to play. La 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 la. Andy Pandy's here today. La 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 la.
Andy Pandy's somewhere in the garden today. Let's go and find him, shall we? There he is, on his swing. Hello, Andy Pandy. Oh, look, children. He's waving with his feet. That's because he's holding on so tightly with his hands. Do you remember his swing, children? Some of you have seen it before, haven't you? Andy likes swinging, don't you? Have you got a swing in your garden? I expect some of you have.
Page 60, we have Dodo's pop date book. Who, when, where in July? 31 days in the life of a pop lover. This is Maureen O'Grady again, under the pseudonym Dodo. It's a What's On list for July 67. So you got the Monkees performing two shows at Wembley Stadium, it says here. In reality, it was Empire Pool, which became Wembley Arena. I can't see the Monkees filling Wembley Stadium. Well, maybe at this time, all the readership of Brave went. Yeah, 10th of July, we've got a day of celebration for fans of Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch. It's happy birthday to Beaky, 23 years young.
Oh, sweet. But it's also on the 6th is Alan Freeman's birthday. Happy birthday, Alan.
Do you know how old he was?
No.
40.
Whoa, if they would have known that in those days, he would have had his cards.
Yeah.
And I don't mean birthday cards.
11th of July. The John Lennon film, How I Won the War, should be out next week.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it wasn't, because it was delayed by 3 months.
What happened? I don't remember.
It wasn't released till the 18th of October, because this is after completing the film, Richard Lester went off to work on Petulia with Julie Christie. Oh, yes. Yeah, so, right, here's one for you. 16th of July, which of these live shows, Gail, would you have gone to? It's a choice between Chris Farlow in Blackpool, Gino Washington and the Ram Jam Bam at Great Yarmouth, The Bachelors at Blackpool Opera House, Engelbert Humperdinck, his dinkle is always being humpled, at Cranbrew Fold Inn, or Whistling Jack Smith at Morecambe Pier.
It has to be Chris Farlow and Blackpool.
Yeah.
And you could have a stick of rock as well as price of admission.
So your other birthdays this month, we've got Judy Burham of the Seekers, who's 24. Fluff, who's 40. Ringo, who's 27. Roger McGuinness, 25. Soup Money, 25. Spencer Davis, 26. Mick Jagger, 23. And Rick Wright from Pink Floyd, 22. But I love this little bit.
It's nice, and there's a Canadian. Paul Anka is 26 today. He was Canadian. And when he wrote his first, was it Diana?
Diana.
He was 16, I believe.
Wow.
Canadian advanced, you see. And notes, should the new Beatles single be out soon? Well, it was like clockwork. In the summer there was a single, and in December you had your album. Yeah, and there's an advert I also love here. We always left early until Brainwave will buy a Lambretta. And it was for Lambretta, oh, they're scooters, motor scooters.
Mm.
Beautiful Italian ones. And it's about no longer, you didn't have to worry about fares anymore or queuing or catching the last bus. It was part of youth power. They had the money, at least to put down, to buy it on HP, down payment. But it was freedom, whereas their parents would have had to get a car or whatever, which, of course, a lot of people never had. And not only was it freedom, it was stylish.
Yeah.
Weren't they bright red and wonderfully Italian that you saw in all the 60s films? There was so much more available to them, and they grabbed it, and they ran with it. Or in this case, rode a Lambretta with it.
Yeah. It's like a little cartoon on the final frame, and they're riding the Lambretta, and the woman's saying, "No more last buses for us, Bob." And he's saying, "No more fares or queuing either." And looking at the photo, "No more helmets either."
No, that's true. And his tie is flapping in the wind. He obviously never heard of Isadora Duncan and the things that can happen. But I'd like in the next frame if she said, "Can you drop me off at my boyfriend's, Bob?" But it was...
Different times.
Yes, and all the better for it.
Page 63, we have a section called Boys and Girls Lost and Found. Find old friends by writing to Rave. Send us all the information you have on the raver you are looking for. And there's all sorts of lost people here and people they, you know, fancied on a train. But one here from Vivian Brands in New York who writes, "Last June, I met a boy called David Gilmore in Cambridge. He played in a group called The Jokers Wild. He said he planned to go to London and always wore blue jeans with patches on them. If anyone knows where he is, please tell him to write to the girl with long blonde hair who pushed his van up Guest Road to get it started. Tell him Vivian is anxious to hear from him, if he remembers her." It's incredible.
It worries me that Vivian is anxious to hear from him, but let's hope for the best of reasons. But also... why was it the girl with the long blonde hair pushed his van up Guest Road? Was he sitting in it? Where were you, Dave?
He was helping by holding the steering wheel, I guess.
Oh, well, good of him. And also, which you pointed out, that people put their addresses into the magazine.
Yeah.
One of my favourite stories was from a couple of years ago when Pete Townsend and... Roger Daltrey were going to do a gig together, and they were arguing over something that they couldn't agree, whether I think that Pete might have wanted a simulcast or something. It was within the last 10 years, and he got fed up enough. Pete wrote to the Times and said he wants to do this, so he'd appreciate if everybody would put pressure on Roger and write to Roger, and he included Roger's email address.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, way to go, Pete.
Wow.
Talk about pass-ag. You know?
Did they publish it, though?
Yeah. I would think Roger Daltrey, an annoyed Roger Daltrey, changed his email address immediately. But,
outrageous.
I mean, that is passive-aggressive aggression at the best. Oh, way to go, Pete. You got to admire it.
I'm going to email him a complaint to petetownsend@gmail.com. That'll show him.
Wonderful Eggpod Express.
Singles chart from the 5th of July 1967. We got Procol Harum, White as Shade of Pale, at number one. And in the albums chart from the 2nd of July 1967... Sergeant Pepper.
Well, it certainly was an eclectic mix, because in the singles charts, you had Whiter Shade of Pale at number one, but you also had Harry Secombe in the charts at number 19.
That's been in the charts forever.
Yes.
Charlie Chaplin's song.
Yeah. And from the albums, again, Sgt. Pepper was number one, but there were a lot of show albums, which were very popular in the 60s. In the charts 2, 6 and 8 were all, well, show tunes from musicals. Number 2 was The Sound of Music, original soundtrack. 6 was Fiddler on the Roof, original London cast. And 8 was Dr. Zhivago. But it was great music.
Mm.
But it was quite a wide range of music. You had the Dubliners with A Drop of the Heart stuff. Psychedelic or not, but, you know, wedged between the Mamas and Papas and Engelbert Humperdinck.
I think obviously in the top 10 as well, you've got two Monkees albums, number 4 and number 5, with the first two albums. There's a new entry, the 18, with Headquarters,
yeah,
which is an astonishing. That was the album they did where they said, right, we're going to play all the instruments. I think it was produced by Chip Douglas. And they, I think, more or less played them all, but it's like a punk album. I love it. It's really good. They're really thrashing around. There's some great songs on there.
Yes. I also loved in the singles Vicky Carr, It Must Be Him.
Oh, really?
If you remember, because the lyrics were basically, it must be him, it must be him, oh please, dear Lord, it must be him, it must be him, it must be him. Whereas the French, it's from the French song, Seul sur son toile, which is something about alone amongst the stars. So it was this poetic French piece that was reduced to, it must be him, it must be him, oh please, it must be him.
Very bad memories of that song because my mum basically got divorced in the end of the 60s or early 70s, whatever it was, and she would take solace by playing all these stuff like that. And I remember that song at the time thinking, oh, turn that thing off.
Oh.
It's just the lyrics are just, oh,
well,
that's,
well,
me.
Maybe your mother needed to hear Vicky Carr at that moment, so we must thank Vicky Carr. But it wasn't exactly a feminist statement.
No.
But when you're heartbroken, you don't tend to
be. It's sort of stand by your man, and if he's gone, just wail, it must be him.
Well, it was every time the phone would ring you, it must be him, it must be him. But it wasn't.
Maybe it was David Gilmour. But yeah, the singles, Engelbert Humperdinck, his Dinkles Always Being Humbled, is there again at 2. It was just a huge year for him. You remember 67 as Psychedelia Flower Power, but he was there right at the top for most of it.
There was some heavy stuff, like with the Cream, Strange Brew, and See Emily Play from Floyd. Still one of my favourites. And at the same time, Topple from Fiddler on the Roof, If I Were a Rich Man. And most of the people in the charts were by this point.
Small Faces, Here Comes a Nice.
Yeah.
It's up 2 places. It's sort of like the lower end of the charts. You've got all these sort of Pink Floyd and Cream. Because they're obviously focusing more on albums, I guess. Yes, some great songs in here.
But the Kinks' Waterloo Sunset. Oh. Was there ever a better song? I mean, the Kinks were fantastic. But again, a classic that has stood the test of time, as classics do.
Peaked at number 2, it's down this week to number 23. And then the Beach Boys at 24 with Then I Kissed Her. They weren't very happy about this because, you know, obviously they're working on Smile, they've just done Pet Sounds, and Capital basically needed product. So they took this really old song that was not representative of what they were doing at the time.
Huh.
And put it out. It's a great song. But
yes. And wasn't it also one of the Beach Boys wanted to go back to the old surfing ways?
Mike Love was always a great exponent of that, wasn't he?
When you think of God Only Knows and yet Mike Love wanted to go back to Surfer Boy. There's a disconnect somewhere there. What this list shows me is people of all ages were buying music, and that must be a goodly thing to be applauded.
So overall, Rave was an incredibly sophisticated publication. It was tailored perfectly for a style-conscious female audience right at the epicentre of the swinging 60s. It was cutting-edge, blending the high aspiration of the expensive production and Spanish holidays with genuine counterculture politics. So reading it now, it must take you back to this incredible time.
It does. What I think, it must have been a lot of fun to work on Rave and go on all those Spanish holidays. No, it was aspirational, it was youth, it was freedom, it was fun. Who could ask for anything more?
So Rave folded in 1971.
Oh, couldn't you break it to me gently?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. An editor, Don Wedge, went on to work for Polygram Records, but his love for music never waned, and in particular his first love, jazz. And when he was hospitalised at the end of his life, his wife bought him a CD player with albums by Stan Kenton, Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington. So it's a nice touching end.
Aww.
It's a beautiful magazine.
Yes, and thank you for a great magazine.
Yes, thank you. So thanks to Susie Humphrey for the jingles. And to read this issue of Rave, the magazine's online at iamtheeggpod.com. We'll also find an exclusive playlist of this week's top 30 singles. To support this podcast and to access bonus content, please subscribe to patreon.com/eggpod. But for now, thank you so much, Gail Reynard. It's been a joy.
It's been a pleasure, and at least this time I didn't have to walk 2 miles through a blizzard to get Rave magazine.